thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Penultimate.
Here's John Williams.
We get to use the word penultimate today. It's not that often you get a chance to say that. I'll be using the word penultimate. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, overlooking beautiful downtown Chicago. Blue skies and 82 degrees. Okay, 50-something, but still, what a nice day today is. Compared to some of the days we've been putting up with lately. So we're in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and not only are we overlooking beautiful Chicago today, but the just-opened River Walk, which I walked a little bit today. In fact, I walked as far as I could and back, and it's actually very nicely done so far. More about that. But if you plan on coming to Chicago, to downtown Chicago, this spring or summer or fall, know that that's something that should be on your to-do list. If you thought, well, we need to go to Millennium Park or we want to go to the River Walk on the other side of Michigan Avenue, now consider taking it all the way down to the lake. More about that a little later on. Hope you had a good weekend. Cubs amazed and entertained again, 15 innings in miserable weather. The White Sox are only 3 games under 500. They played some entertaining baseball. The big sports moment, of course, this weekend was Kawhi Leonard hitting that impossible shot. Adam Hogue rightly said that that ball going in after hitting the rim 4 times would have been if Cody Parkey's field goal, the double doink, had gone in as well. It didn't seem like that was possible, but it was, at least in Kawhi Leonard's case. Not in the Bears' case. Steve Cochran featured that audio in various languages this morning of the play-by-play people around the world just losing their minds over that shot. It's amazing that he got it off. I mean, forget about it bouncing around and in. It's amazing he got it off. One of the languages done was in Turkish. I'll play for you the Turkish play-by-play, and our own Turkish producer, Elif Garis, will translate shortly. Game of Thrones penultimate episode. There it is. Ding, ding, ding. I got to use the word penultimate. It was the penultimate episode, right? That means the...
next to last?
Next to last.
Yeah, that is correct.
No, wait, but that was episode 4. So there's 2 more. So the next episode will be the penultimate, right? Because there's six episodes. No, that was 5?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was the next to last episode.
Yep.
So you used it right and then completely lost your
lost my confidence in it. It was very, very good, very fiery, lots of deaths, lots of, I mean, my wife and son and Daisy, the dizzy dappled dachshund, were just glued to the TV. That was something to see.
Utterly shocking, and guess what? Another error.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah.
What now?
Jamie's hand magically grew back. There was a scene where he's hugging Cersei and they forgot to put the golden hand on.
Well, I saw that scene and I noticed that, but I thought, oh, that's just me. I don't pay close enough attention. Hello? Come on, you guys.
I know, right?
Plus,
Getting sloppy.
There were some Dunkin' Donuts also seen in one of the fight scenes. There's some scatter about. And then Steve Cochran was talking about last night watching, this morning he was talking about watching over the weekend, Veep, which wrapped up its series.
Yeah, I haven't seen the last one was last night, right?
And he was quite satisfied. And the reviews I'm reading are that it was a good final episode of Veep.
They absolutely this season have used reality.
That's what they were saying, that they seem to, as hard as it is to imagine what tomorrow will tell, it seems like they really well picked the topics and wrote around them. You know, they said in one review I was reading, Steve, obviously you watch Veep more than I do. I've only watched a handful of episodes over the years. I seem to like it, but I just haven't made the time to watch it. Maybe I will now. But they said she never declared her political party, that you don't know in the series, Veep, if she's a Democrat or Republican. And...
and she behaves in a way that she could be either, really.
Right.
Because really all she does is it's all self-absorbed.
Well, that was the point of the review was that, and it did, and of course it doesn't matter because it's not about ideology, it's about her, her, her. And you may say that's like Donald Trump, but that's not what this is. It's really a character they've created, but they have sort of anticipated some of the events in the news and stuck her into it. But Cochran said, well, what have been the greatest season finales of all time?
Oh, really?
And, no, he said, what are they? And I don't know that he put that on the list, but I started to Google that today because there's a million articles about best series final episodes ever. And the more I think about it, the more I think it's sort of like, what's the best song ever? Who's the best rock and roll band? And it tends to be something that hits you at a particular time in your life. And it's hard for people, I think, later in life to say that the final episode of The Wire was as good as the final episode of St. Elsewhere. Now, you may not have watched St. Elsewhere because you're younger. But if you were watching St. Elsewhere when it first came out, you really remember that. And it sort of formed this spot in your heart that is hard to displace. And that's what you do with music, and that's what you do with all kinds of memories. So when I say, what are the great season episode, series-ending episodes for me, it's MASH. But plenty of people now haven't even watched that.
I never saw it. I love the show, but I was a budding college TV reporter at the time.
Yeah.
So we were running around house to house doing a story on house parties. There was no DVR. There wasn't even VCR.
Oh, that's right. If you missed it, you missed it.
Right. So I never did catch up to it.
St. Elsewhere, I'll put on my list.
Absolute best.
Breaking Bad and Mary Tyler Moore Show. I'll put both of those on there.
Rare duo series ending.
Yeah.
The Newhart show is good.
Newhart is on a lot of the lists for the best. Battlestar Galactica makes a lot of TV critics' best series ending episode ever.
Beats. What about Sons of Anarchy?
Sons of Anarchy does. Beats?
Bears Battlestar Galactica.
I'm sorry, what are you saying?
The Office.
Oh, Beats Office?
No.
Wait. I don't know what you're saying.
Dwight Schrute from The Office used to say Beats, Bears, Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, yeah.
Now the joke's dead.
Well, it's lost on me because I don't even watch Battlestar Galactica. But some critics I know say that that's a worthy investment of your time. You know, it doesn't make a lot of the lists. Mad Men, best series ever. Worst season. In fact, it makes some worst series ending lists. Mad Men. Do you remember that? It was all outside.
Mm-hmm.
There were no interiors. Don was wearing a Hawaiian shirt, for crying out loud. Maybe that worked for you. It didn't work for me. I remember when Lost, which we were really glued to. Do you remember Lost and how wrapped up in that show people were? When the final episode of Lost came out, people were really anxious to figure that thing out. And in the end, the episode meaning was love or something like that. And I remember being really disappointed and underwhelmed with the final episode of Lost.
I'm still confused by it, to be honest.
That show changed so many times. To me, it was, my wife was into it. I think my son was into it. I was at first, and then I kind of got off the bus. Seinfeld definitely does not make people's
best. Yeah, that was
best.
Too bad.
Yeah, which is a shame, right?
They kind of insulted the audience.
How do you mean?
Well, because you were so invested in it, you followed it so closely for so many years, and then at the end, they just said, well, this really wasn't about anything.
Yeah, right.
You guys are fools to watch it.
And they put him in jail.
Yeah.
You know what made Ranker? So here's Ranker.com, which is a crowdsourcing site, but I think they about got it right. Number one, all-time MASH. Number two, Breaking Bad. Number three, Newhart. Number four, Friends. Number five, Cheers. They have The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson at number six, which, you know, maybe doesn't even qualify because that wasn't episodic television. It was a talk show, but when Bette Midler sang to Johnny Carson on the final episode, I believe that was the final episode and not the penultimate episode, that was really a special television moment. And then Johnny just sat there and talked and, you know, said goodbye. And then Johnny did what a lot of people can't do. He went away. The Sopranos on the Ranker list is at 11. It's in some people's top fives as well. But again, that wasn't a show that was near and dear to my heart, so it did not make my list. Line one wanted to comment on this list. Oh, yeah, Michael, you're on WGN. Hey, Mike, you're on the air. What's up?
Thank you. Well, I'm 70 years old, so a lot of people won't remember this. But the greatest ending for a series was The Fugitive, where Dr. Kimball finally caught the one-armed murderer of his wife.
I was looking today at that final scene snapshot where there the two of them are in the same frame. And but here again, I never watched that series because I'm not that old.
So it
just can't make my list because I didn't see it. But the people that pay attention to TV say that's a good choice, Michael.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was, I think I was like a junior or senior in high school when it came on. But
yeah.
So there you have it.
Well put. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your call. The texts include these: 6 feet under, the next text 6 feet under, the next text 6 feet under, the next text 6 feet under. The next text, the fugitive has to be up there. Michael will appreciate that. And so on the list goes. Hey, I told you that I tried to get onto the L a couple of weeks ago, and they had some criminal activity on Argyle Street on the north side of Chicago, which slowed the red line so much that when I took the escalator down to my stop, the platform was filled and there ain't no trains coming. And when trains did come up, you couldn't get on them. Sometimes literally nobody could get on them because this train service was so interrupted that when the train would come to a stop, it was packed. The doors would open to let people off, but you couldn't barely get in. And there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people on my stop, and I had to be somewhere. I had to come home and drink a cocktail. So I finally, after about 40 minutes, thought, this isn't happening. And so I, like many people, walked back up the stairs at my L stop and went back through the turnstile. And as I did, it dawned on me that I've just given $3 to the CTA for a ride I couldn't take. And then I grabbed a cab and went home. We reached out to the CTA and said, you guys should have a system to sort of reimburse people in circumstances like that. And they said they'd get back to us, and they did. And they say, among other things, John, so they sort of recanted my activity, what happened, correctly. And then they say, like nearly every other transit agency in the country, the CTA does not offer refunds when service is temporarily disrupted. In this particular situation, the temporary disruption to service was an unforeseen circumstance beyond our control. Well, I'll grant them that, but it was beyond my control, too, and I just gave you $3. Still, they say these types of situations are exactly why we have such a robust customer communication system in place. Within minutes of a service delay or issue, we're pushing out alerts in Syndicate via our text, email alerts, digital displays, and social media so the riders can make informed decisions. Here's what happens. A lot of us get to the train stop. You go through the turnstile. You don't look up to see where your train is, but sometimes you will see delayed after you get through the turnstile, and you go, oh, crap, now I got to wait. But you don't know if you're going to wait 45 minutes. I get the point that they do push out, and the Tribune does as well for them when there's going to be a delay. But I came up with a solution because even as we were talking about this last week, they said, okay, suppose the CTA was going to accommodate you, John. How are they going to give you your money back? And, you know, how are they going to prove that, in fact, you're a person who really needs it and aren't ripping them off? Here's what they should do, I think. They're on the platform. When they see people coming back up the steps, there's a CTA person going, if you decided not to take your train, we have single ride passes here, and they're just handing them out like $3 bills. Now they don't have to invent new software to recredit my Ventra pass and it gets complicated with computers and systems. You're just handing out passes, single ride pass, single ride pass. Now, maybe some people would find a way to abuse that, but I think that the abuse would not be that great, and the good would be considerable. I'm not being asked to pay for something I couldn't use, and it's goodwill for the CTA. You know where this happens sometimes is on Metra. On Metra sometimes, if the trains are so crowded that the conductor can't walk up and down, say because there's been a delay or it's Taste of Chicago or there's, if there's a reason that the trains on Metra are so crowded that the guy can't get up and down between stops, they just say it's a free ride for everybody. And Metra takes it in the shorts, but in the long run, I think people are using public transportation and that's good.
Everybody who doesn't have a monthly pass.
Say that again, Steve?
Well, I mean, you know, it's if you have a monthly pass and you're on a Metra train that's overpacked and you're sitting next to someone with a 10 ride, you just got a free ride.
Well, I can't make everybody
it's not
happy.
A perfect plan.
Okay, well, it's not. But it works for me, so I think it's just dandy. Okie dokie. Oh, wow, thanks, Ella. Yeah, the Americans. Some of you texted in and said the Americans, great series-ending episode, and that does appear on a lot of the lists, too. MASH, West Wing, Last great episode, John. Don't forget Star Trek Next Generation had a great ending. Which Newhart's show, the original or the second one? As I recall, both were pretty good, but I think the one we all remember fondly would have been the second one, where Bob wakes up in bed next to
Suzanne Plachet.
Suzanne Plachet, and that would have been a sort of...
So he dreamed the whole series from his original. He woke up with his original wife and had just dreamed the entire subsequent series.
Which was fun. It was cute.
It was a takeoff on St. Elsewhere.
And who didn't love... Yeah, right, exactly. And who didn't love Suzanne Plachet? Dave, you wanted to mention that, too? You're on WGN. Hi.
Yeah, I did. You said talk about when he was running the bed and breakfast, and then he went to sleep, and he woke up, or he passed out, is how it happened, at the door, and then he woke up, Plachet was in there, but... I think they might have stole that storyline from Dynasty, because I think Bobby actually, they were going to say that he actually was one of the killers or something, and then all of a sudden he comes out of the shower and is like, oh, yeah, I just was a dream. You know,
right.
I was like, wait a minute.
The first Newhart was better than the second, but the second ending on Newhart was sure fun. That was a great.
Yeah, but if you watch the ending, it's actually on YouTube now for the second episode. But he turns around and he says, you know, my wife in the dream or at this cottage was a blonde. And then Plachet rolls over. And then all of a sudden, 2 seconds later, she turns the light on and goes, who's this blonde? And that's how it
Very good. Thanks for the call.
Have a good day.
You bet. Bye, Dave. After paying $36,000 for new windows, a suburban family is still waiting. Lourdes Duarte goes looking for answers. WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9. If you drop what you're doing right now and call my friends at Nextdoor and Window, you can still get 40% off installation of windows and doors, 18 months interest-free financing. Call 1-800-NEXT-DOOR. And schedule your free estimate. Nextdoor and Window offers it all. They've got the wood, the vinyl, the fiberglass. They've got Marvin. That's what they put in our place. They have a variety of names. You'll find something you like, and they'll work within your budget. It's easy to invite these people in your home. I was fascinated, actually enjoyed it, when they first came to our house, and they were able to tell us how much energy we're losing, how much heat is coming in and out of the windows and doors. And then we said, well, let's start there. Good idea. You want to spend more money next year, next spring, do that. I mean, it was just so easy for us to work within our budget and a timeline with them. And now you save 40% off installation, 18 months interest-free financing. Call 1-800-NEXT-DOOR or go to 1-800-NEXT-DOOR.com. By the way, we'll visit with an economics professor.
Oh, good, John. That sounds like an economics professor that will spark up my day.
Phil Levy's really good. He's at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. And I have questions about this trade tariff thing we've got going on with China. The market, the Dow was down at one point almost 700 points. I'm watching the screen now. It'll scroll over in a second here. But we've been down around 650. Where are we right now, Steve? Do you have the latest reading on the Dow reacting to the China trade tariffs?
We're down 577.
Well, look at that. It's getting better. And maybe this is the... Here's something I want to ask the guy. Maybe it should. Maybe this is the price we all need to pay. If China is stealing intellectual property or mandating that our companies turn over intellectual property to them if they want to do business over there, then maybe we ought to finally just say, that's it, we've had it. And this is the price we all have to collectively pay. So maybe you're okay with that. But as a result, we are now saying, okay, since you guys aren't going to negotiate with us in good faith, we're going to put tariffs on products that are coming into the United States from China. Products that even sound, look, and feel like American stuff, but gets assembled over there or manufactured over there, and we buy it here. And now, in order for us to get those items, it's going to cost more. Steve, have you purchased live eels anytime lately?
It's been a while, John.
Well, guess what? Live eels are going up. As well as, I've just got a list of the items that we'll now pay more for as a result of the trade tariffs starting Friday. That is last Friday. These are in place. Squash going up, fresh or frozen. Cucumbers, which is weird because China doesn't grow cucumbers for us. So I'm not exactly sure how it is. I'll ask the economics professor. How is it the cucumbers are going up? Apricot jam is going to be more expensive. Dog food, cat food. There will be something on this list you like.
I can't eat my dog food without apricot jam.
Printing ink. Hello. Toner is going to get more expensive, as if that were possible. Bovine semen? Yep, you're going to pay more for that too, Bucky. Eye makeup, lip makeup, shampoo, shaving cream, radios, pneumatic tires, leather, dog leashes, handbags, bamboo, many types of wood, plywood, rattan floor coverings, baskets made of rattan, wool, silk, and yarn, cotton, any woven fabric, marble slabs, roofing slate. You know, this list is a reminder of just how much we do rely on China. Manure spreaders, and I don't mean just me. Drilling machines, sewing machines, TV monitors, hair clippers, bicycles, bicycle helmets, motorcycles, buttons. Have you bought a button lately? You're going to pay more for it. Then we'll talk about why, what's going to happen as a result of all of this at 2:30.
Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera.
Have you watched the video of this today, Steve?
Will be.
I suppose I'm not the first person to play it for you. Just delightful. What a fun song. Doris Day has passed away. Peggy Lipton died over the weekend, too.
When I grew up and fell in love, I asked my sweetheart what lies ahead.
I don't know that we have a Doris Day-like actress or star today, do we? Somebody who is an all-American good girl, never a sexy or salty word from her. She was, sort of America's sweetheart. So maybe that whole concept is sort of passed. I mean, we have some, and she was beautiful, and she was a singer, and she was a good actress, and she did well on TV, and she did well in film. I don't know that we have a Doris Day today.
I like Hillary Duff because she's not stirring things up. You know, she's not on the tabloids every week.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe everybody's got their own version of that. Is there a person who universally everybody goes, oh, we just like her so much? I don't know who it is.
Oh, Lady Gaga.
I would say Lady Gaga is not Doris Day.
What about Emma Stone?
That's who I was thinking of.
Oh, well, Lady Gaga's Lady Gaga.
Yeah, but Lady Gaga is, I mean, listen, Lady Gaga succeeds on a lot of fronts, right? Like film, obviously, concerts. She's a fashion icon.
She's provocative.
She started as a dancer, but Doris Day was not provocative.
So she's vanilla then?
Doris Day is vanilla. Totally vanilla. Absolutely. At a time when Americans love vanilla.
needed vanilla in the 60s and the early 70s.
Yeah, actually, maybe she was an antidote to a lot of the things that were troubling us. And then there was Doris Day, who did not lead an entirely happy life either. And passed away. So where were we? Oh, do you have the play-by-play, Aleph, of the... Cochran was on this morning, and they were playing in the various languages the way they do sometimes. The play-by-play of that big sports moment over the weekend. Kawhi Leonard, formerly of the San Antonio Spurs, now of the Toronto Raptors, hits the Game 7 winning shot in the playoff series with the 76ers. The ball bounced 4 times on the rim before it miraculously went in. And the miracle wasn't that the ball went in. To me, it's that he even got that shot off. He was running 80 miles an hour into the corner and then just jumped. And with those giant paws of his, lobbed the ball 18 feet high into the air, and it came down and bounced, 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 bounced in. In the amount of time it took that ball to go in, he sort of bent over into a crouch and was watching it, almost as if it was in slow motion. People on the bench and in the stands around him were striking these, I can't believe I'm witnessing this, poses, and the ball bounced. The ball bounced in and out, and it took about 15 minutes for it finally go down. And when it did, this is how they described it in Turkey with the Turkish play-by-play guys on the call.
Kawhi Leonard'ı buldular. Ben Simmons'ın yakın savunması. Leonard boş çıkarıyor. Leonard attı. Kawhi Leonard basket! Kawhi Leonard içeriye düştü bu top. Kawhi Leonard. Vince Carter'ın kefareti ödendi.
Producer Aleph speaks Turkish. What have we got here?
They catch up to Kawhi Leonard. Leonard gets it up empty. Kawhi Leonard, pass! Kawhi! Kawhi Leonard! Kawhi Leonard! This ball fell in. Penance has been paid.
Penance has been paid?
Yes.
Wow. That's fancy.
Producer Elif, if this producing thing doesn't work out, I sense a career for you in Turkish play-by-play. So more slowly, though, just literally tell me what they said again.
They catch up to Kawhi Leonard. Leonard gets it up empty. Kawhi Leonard, pass. They actually say, puss. Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi, this ball fell in. Penance has been paid.
Penance has been paid.
It even sounds like they're saying penance to Carter. I don't know who Carter is, but Carter, that's what they say.
Penance has been paid to Carter, whatever that means. So either that was lost in translation.
Most likely.
But somebody who knows the NBA better may know, tell us what that would mean if penance has been paid to Carter. What do they even mean by penance has been paid? So I don't understand the context of how penance would be paid with that shot, but it was sure fun to watch it go in. We're putting up a new news click. We're asking you if you support the trade tariffs which we're imposing on China. You know, the articles that I've been reading about it make it sound like our goals are admirable here. I mean, doesn't it make you mad that China just rips off our intellectual property and that when American companies want to do business over there, they have to turn over the rights to their property, to their secrets, to their businesses in order for the Chinese to allow it. The Chinese subsidize their businesses, which makes it harder for us to compete. It's not a level playing field. Donald Trump said all along, you know, when I get to be president, we'll just hit them with a tariff so hard that they'll cooperate. Now they're not. They're reciprocating with tariffs of their own. So that pretty much everybody's going to pay more for everything, at least in the short run. Looking at the list, everybody's got their list of the things. I mean, you can cherry pick them. There's 6,000 items on the list. Dog collars, baseball mitts, ski gloves will face a 25% tariff. Sledgehammers. Hurry up and buy a saw blade if you want one, because that's about to go up. 1,000 of the 6,000 items on the list are chemicals. A lot of them are raw materials, yarn, wool, stuff like that. CD cases, CD players, cassette tapes, and cassette players. I don't think that's going to impact people a lot these days. Apparel made from reptile leather. Wooden shingles, anvils, Christmas tree lights. Those are all made in China. You knew that. Mark, you're on WGN. Can you help us out there, Mark?
Yeah, hey, Clue John. So after the shot that Leonard made, ESPN flashback, I guess years ago when Vince Carter was chosen for the Raptors, he launched up a buzzer beater against the 76ers, and it bounced out.
Oh!
So that's the only thing I could think of when he said the Turkish play-by-play referred to penance has been paid to Carter. So
Vince Carter, formerly of the Raptors, missed a buzzer beater against the 76ers. Now Kawhi Leonard hits it. Penance has been paid.
Do you know how validated I feel in this moment right now?
Because you were really working
more
on,
than you.
You were working on the translation going, Elif turns to me and she goes, well, it sounds like he's saying penance has been paid to Carter. And I'm like, Elif, I don't know what you're talking about. What are you saying? She goes, I think that's what he said.
Dave Bennett didn't know either.
Mark, that makes sense, sir.
Yeah, and like I said, I just briefly caught it after Leonard made the shot. They flashed back to that, so that's all I could figure out.
Wow, what a great call. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate your help.
Bye.
Kawhi'den ödü buldular. Ben Simmons'ın yakın savunması. Leonard boş çıkarıyor. Leonard attı. Kawhi Leonard bastı! Kawhi! Kawhi Leonard! Kawhi Leonard içeriye düştü bu top. Kawhi Leonard! Vince Carter'ın kefareti ödendi.
We came up to people in Scotland when we were there last week, and we said to them, I didn't, but somebody in our group did, came up to a person from Scotland and said, do we sound as hard to understand to you as you sound to us? And that was all of us speaking the same language, but with accents. And the person in Scotland said, yeah, you Americans are hard to understand. And that was us sharing a language. I still don't understand how people are able to discern syllables or words in Turkish. But that was fun. It's 147. The guy that caught that baseball and didn't give it back, a last word from him. He's going to join us in a couple of minutes. Is that Eli Hides on line four, Elif or seven? Is it Eli? This is Sean Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. We've been talking about you here in Chicago. People have been talking about you all across the country. I guess you're not surprised to hear that, huh?
Little surprised. I mean, I don't mind being a part of the story, but I really wish it was more on Albert and his achievement. I didn't know it was going to blow up as big. No, I've been sort of naive through the whole thing, actually.
You sound a little distraught. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm good. I just trying to slow my speaking down. I've been told I talk really fast during interviews.
Oh, I see. Well, so far, so good. So here's the deal. We talked about this last week. Albert Pujols picked up his 2,000th RBI. Only three other baseball players, and certainly the modern era, have been able to do that. And Pujols gets his 2,000th RBI. In this case, it was on a home run that was hit in Detroit, and you were at the game. He plays for the Angels. He's the visiting team. And so, as a result, that 2,000th RBI ball is in the stands, and it's in your hands. Did you catch it on the fly or on a bounce?
It was a bounce, and it was just lying on the ground. I reached out and picked it up. It was really, really lucky.
You didn't even know, as I understand it, that it was his. I mean, we get distracted during games, and all of a sudden the ball's rolling down. You pick it up and didn't even realize it was the Pujols 2,000th ball, huh?
Well, we had just sat down, so I didn't even know who was at bat. Tigers, Angels. Like, we had just scurried into the stadium because of the rain delay.
And then the people from MLB then come up to you and say, all right, listen, come with us. We're going to get you an autographed Pujols baseball in exchange for this valuable souvenir that you have in your hand. And the story has been that you didn't like how they approached it. They were a little aggressive and assertive, and you didn't want to give up the ball. Is that right?
I didn't have time to process it. I just wanted to think about it, and they really did not like me thinking about it. I don't really like how I gave the black eye here, and I'm trash talking my own team. But yeah, I just wanted time to think about it, and they wanted all these offers to expire as soon as they walked away. And I hate focusing on that part of the story, but they wanted to authenticate the ball, but they assured me that they would not do it for me, only if I gave it to them.
Plus, your brother, you said, was a St. Louis Cardinals fan. Pujols played for the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah.
What a great gift for your brother or your unborn child coming down the pipe here. Maybe that'd be a great heirloom for your kid, huh?
You know, I was going through a lot of possibilities, like, in the moment. You know, it was a really emotional day, and I saw a lot of, what I could do with it. But, after sleeping on it, I've taken the ball out. It makes people so happy. It's just pure joy. And, I'd be wrong to keep it. I think it belongs in the hall. I offered it to Pujols for nothing. I mean, I just said, take it, maybe charity if you want to, no big deal. But he's like, keep it if you don't want to put it in the Hall of Fame. So that's kind of what I'm thinking at this point.
Where physically is the ball right now?
It's in my safe. I have a nice safe in my closet, but there's a Teamsters union across the street from my house, and there's a credit union there. I'm going to put in a safety deposit box today.
You could make a lot of money on that if you sold it.
You know, it feels wrong to sell, honestly. I love the game, and my family loves the game, and it's the people's ball at this point. And I've been offered money. I mean, the fans have really been humbling from both St. Louis and the Angels. I've been offered just priceless memorabilia from just all over the country, and
season
I've been offered $25,000 for it, and
really?
I can't do it.
Are you a student?
Yeah, I'm in school here in Detroit.
Do you have student loan debt by any chance?
Oh, you know it.
Think about that. There you are sitting. You should talk to Ray Kaplan. She's a friend of mine, and she'll help you manage that student debt. But in the meantime, you've got a baseball that would probably pay for a semester to a law school.
It'd pay for, a little over a year. Maybe I'm just lucky enough that I'm not desperate enough to need the money. I'm sure a lot of people would, and I wouldn't blame anyone for selling it. But for myself, I guess I'm fortunate enough to be in a place in my life to where, I could really do the right thing or get money for charity or, Kurt Gibson's we've been communicating, and, he has Parkinson's, and he has a Parkinson's charity that, if MLB doesn't want to deal with me directly, which, I'm not sure what they're doing, Maybe they did deal with him, and I can get some money for Parkinson. So.
Wow. Well, I got to tell you, of all of the fans in all of the game, all the ballparks and all the joints in all the world, that it would land in your hands and you would have this attitude about it is really exceptional in every way. And for the record, I said, if Pujols wants to give you $50,000 for it, fine. He's made $150 million. He's not a bad guy, but all I'm saying is you're not a bad guy either for keeping it or cashing in on it. I'm 100% on board. You'd get no judgment from this microphone if you decided to keep it or sell it.
Well, thank you, sir. But again, the people that have been trying to buy it, they've been humbling too. Like, they just love Albert Pujols so much, and I wish he played for the Tigers. But like, they want to get the ball back to him, and he means so much to them. And I guess these nostalgic baseball fans that are just sort of coming out of the woodwork now.
And as a Cub fan, I don't think I'd want to touch that ball.
Yeah, really. Well, nice to meet you. Congratulations. Financialrelief.com, by the way. Ray Kaplan, friend of mine. If you've got any student loan debt, she'll help you. But that's just that's the truth, but that's me just being silly here. It's sure nice to meet you. Congratulations on your 15 minutes of fame and how well you've handled it, Eli.
I wouldn't say that, but thank you. I appreciate it.
There you go.
Thinking big thoughts. So you don't have to.
Okay.
Here's John Williams.
Looking at the text line. Hi, it's John. Lots of suggestions who the modern-day Doris Day is. We miss you, Doris.
Lord have mercy.
It's 2:08. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studios until 3. Saturday's 10 to noon. This Saturday, though, I won't be here. The show will be, but I'll be at the Tivoli. I'll be at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, the Classic Cinemas Tivoli Theater, with Thomas Jefferson. Last week for you to get tickets. As I understand it, it's not reserved seating. You'll have a seat, but it's first come, first sit. So I'll encourage you to get there early. There's about 700 of you. And I think there's about 100 seats still available. And our friend Thomas Jefferson is actually going to be talking about his visit on Channel 9 at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, I believe. Anyway, WGNradio.com/Jefferson to find out more and get tickets to what will be a unique, unscripted, spontaneous, unrehearsed conversation with me and the third president of the United States. You get to ask questions, too. We said, who's the modern-day Doris Day? John, what about Lady Gaga? Elif, there's another one for you.
I thought of another one as well. Anne Hathaway.
Very nice.
Because she can sing. She's very bubbly and sweet, but also very talented.
Wholesome.
Acting-wise.
John, what about Mandy Moore? What about Zooey Deschanel? Deschanel's a nice choice there.
Yeah, but Doris Day was big. And that's the problem, too. We're too scattered now, too.
That's it. I don't think anybody can dominate any scene today the way any of the stars did back then. There were only 3 channels. Four or five if you lived in a big city, and there weren't as many movie options either. So if you were a Doris Day, then you are huger than you are if you are, say, Julia Roberts. A few of you are saying, how about Julia Roberts? She's kind of America's sweetheart. Yeah, maybe so. Everybody gets to pick. It's 2:09 on WGN Radio. So it's real estate time, isn't it? Steve, you have had, I believe, on the air before the guest I'm about to put on, Brian Balduff, who is the CEO of VHT Studios.
Oh, yeah, right.
So let's just talk a little bit about this and what you guys do, because I'm really interested in it. Brian, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
I said it's real estate season. I mean, the weather's warmer. I've been watching the signs pop up in neighborhoods around Chicago. We've been promoting an app here at WGNRadio.com called Home Snap, which with the snap of a button on your phone enables you to get the MLS listing and all the information on your phone. That's Home Snap. What a cool app that is. But you guys are also on another cutting edge of technology, and that is staging and the use of drones to sell houses. Am I right about that?
Yes, absolutely.
And is that a new phenomenon, or has that been going on for a long time and I just wasn't paying any attention?
It's really gotten popular just in the last year or so. It's been around for a while, but it's really picked up in popularity.
Obviously, drones haven't been around forever. That's relatively new technology. So do you do that, put a camera on there, and then take an aerial shot of somebody's house? Is that the idea?
We do, yeah. We have drone pilots all over the country, and if you've got a home that's got a really interesting property, you're on a river or a golf course or something, the drone photography and video is really dramatic. Gets people's attention.
Swooping in, that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very, I mean, it's eye-catching. That's what you want when you're selling your home, is you want to catch people's attention, catch their eye, and drone's definitely dramatic. So.
See, now I live in a condo, and it's next to another condo, which is next to another condo, and they're all kind of the same. So I guess that's probably not a good investment for me. My building is not, you know, an aerial shot of my building is not going to help me. So I probably wouldn't be a good candidate for that, right?
Yeah, it's not for everybody. There's certain homes that benefit from drone and others that might not.
Although, you know what? I live near the lake, and I live near Wrigley, so maybe we could just demonstrate very quickly how easy it would be to get to the water if you bought my condo someday, right?
Well, yeah, generally that's what they're used for, is to show kind of what's in the area, access to transportation, schools, parks, recreation. So, yeah, that's a great example.
Now, the other thing you guys do is virtual staging. Tell me what that is.
So virtual staging is very exciting. It's basically being able to virtually redecorate your home when you put it on the market in the photographs. So you can show the buyer the potential of the home, or the possibility of the home, as opposed to the current owner's decorations and furnishing.
So you don't do this for empty properties. You do this for, how do you get the... visually, how do you get people's furniture and wall hangings out of there?
Well, it's interesting. It did start with empty homes, kind of during the recession with all the foreclosed homes, digitally staging furniture in. But the biggest request in the last few years has been, hey, can you just update the look, the style, the decor, so we can digitally take out the existing furnishings and artwork and personal knickknacks and things and start with a clean slate and put in new decor and furnishings and styles and actually show a living room or a master bedroom multiple ways, multiple styles to appeal to the broadest audience possible.
I suppose this saves people the hassle of having to declutter, move everything out, paint a wall a neutral color maybe, that sort of thing?
But it's a huge convenience for sellers because, you know, when you're moving, you're really not motivated to change out your furniture and your carpets and your, you know, your wall hangings and your knickknacks and things. So this allows you to show the home in its best light without having to actually do all of that first or spend all that money or do traditional staging, which is also pretty expensive to rent furniture and vases and things like that to make your home look better.
You know what my struggle with this is, and that is, how is this not like a dating site where you say, well, this is a picture of me if I was 25 pounds thinner and had a better haircut. And they go, yeah, well, that's a good-looking guy. You're not, but that's a good-looking guy. And it's the same way with this house. So, hey, buy my house. It sure could look swell. It doesn't right now. Explain to me the ethics of that, Brian.
Well, sure, sure. It's a good example about the dating site there. I mean, with the home, you're not buying any of the current owner's furnishings or decor or styles. It's really the difference between a house and a home. A house is an empty building, and a home is what you make of it. And so, you know, to show the house as it could look when you move in, it's no different than if you look at photographs of an existing listing today and you see the existing owner's furniture in there. It's not going to be there when you buy that house. You know, neither is the way that a builder shows their properties when they're showing off new homes. So as long as you don't change things that are structural, like, you know, at VHC Studios, we don't change walls and staircases.
I've seen that, by the way. I've seen that. Bad-looking walls, damaged walls, moved, literally moved. And, of course, you can always knock down a wall after you buy the place, but the wall is there.
Yeah, digital technology makes a lot of things possible. You know, this is one of the reasons you got to choose your agents wisely. Get a professional. You know, I think you know, leading companies, just like, we don't allow any of that in our photographs. If you've got a fire plug on your front lawn or you've got a electrical tower in your backyard, we don't just Photoshop those out. Those are structural. This is really more about, you know, updating the style of the, you know, the furnishings, the decor, get a feel for what it would be like for me to live in that property as opposed to the person who currently lives there and makes it a home.
You know, as you described that, I guess really the photograph is just going to get you in the door. If, in fact, I don't think the house is as kept up as I want it to be, this vision notwithstanding, I know I could make it better, but doggone it, I've got more work here to do than I thought because it was digitally staged, then don't buy the house, right? I mean, it's not like people are buying houses sight unseen generally. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And what we see a lot of agents doing today is they'll print out the photographs of the virtually redecorated room, and they'll put it in the room. So when you go to see it at an open house or a showing, you literally say, oh, here's three different ways that this living room could be decorated, or three different ways that this second bedroom could be laid out as a nursery, as a reading room, as a weight room, as a, you know, a college kid's room, anything to help you get a sense of here's what this home could be when I live in it.
What's the price range for these services?
Well, typically, you know, this would be something that your agent would provide, but like I said, it's a lot less than physical staging or doing your own repainting and everything. You know, starts out at a couple $100s, and depending on how much you're going to do or how big the home is, it could go up to a couple thousand.
But that's an interesting point. So maybe I should ask the realtor, especially if it's a higher-end property, right? And I don't know what that means, but if it's going to be a $500,000 house or $1 million house, then maybe the realtor eats that, huh?
We just sold a condo, and it comes with a marketing fee from the realtor. So I think that's where some of that money comes from, John. They charge the seller a quote-unquote marketing fee rather than take it out of their fees for the sale.
I guess you could negotiate that, but I'd like the realtor to pay for that as a potential seller. 773 says, John, when realtors use virtual staging in photography, this must be from a realtor, we are bound by the rules of the MLS. The MLS mandates that we report on the photographs when virtual staging is used. I guess you know that. Is that the rule, Brian?
Yeah, and real estate is a very self-policing industry. If one real estate professional sees another playing gimmicks, they report it to the MLS, and that stops pretty quickly.
One last question. Stan wanted to ask. Stan, you're on WGN. You're on the air. What's up?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Quick question. When you guys get into the whole drone photography and videoing and stuff like that, to get into that bracket and that kind of job with you guys, I'm always being told you need an actual flight license before you can get into that. Is that true for you guys, or is it just an FAA license up to a certain foot?
Yeah, there's actually an FAA certification that you need to pilot drones commercially. So we require that and insurance and a number of other things. It's not super difficult to get. I don't think you need to be a commercial airline pilot to get the drone certification, but there are certifications you need.
That's what I thought. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. And Brian, thanks for the time. I'm sure this is a topic that's going to come up now and again. The name of your business is VHT Studios. What's your website over there?
It's VHT.com, where you can see tons of examples of virtual staging and drone photographs from around Chicago.
Yeah, good luck to you, Brian. I appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you betcha. Timely information this time of year. Who's America's Doris Day today? You said Anne Hathaway, Julia Roberts, Emma Stone. Jennifer Aniston, John, is America's sweetheart now, say a couple of texters. You're on the Anne Hathaway bus still, right, Lauren Lapka? You're still...
I am, just in terms of acting ability and singing ability. I think they're both very high for her. And just being sweet and bubbly and never heard a bad thing about her.
So now let's talk about the Riverwalk, which a lot of us here at WGN Radio are excited about because we walk by it all of the time. The project manager for this, for the city of Chicago, is Michelle Woods. Michelle, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Tell everybody involved in this project, congratulations and good job.
Oh, thank you so much.
But it's not completely done yet, right?
So we just opened up the portion of the Riverwalk that had been closed between Michigan Avenue and Lakeshore Drive, and we spent $12 million making improvements there. So that part of the Riverwalk was originally part of the Rails to Trails transfer to the city, and it was done back in the 1970s, and really not a lot of TLC had been shown to that part of the Riverwalk, and Mayor Emanuel likes to say this is the before Riverwalk, and then the portion that he was able to get us federal funding for between State Street and Lake Street was the after, and so he was really proud and excited to get us some funding to spruce up this eastern portion. There is still some work to be done. We're building a community marketplace between Michigan and Wabash, and that's going to focus on minority and women-owned businesses that are from the different neighborhoods around the city of Chicago. That's still under construction. We're looking to open that up later on this spring in June.
So that'll be food, beverage, vendors of various things, stuff like that?
Exactly. And we also, we're going to have some new retailers, which we hadn't had on the Riverwalk before. So we have a little shop called Neighborly and another shop called Shop Small Chicago, who focus on local Chicago makers and artisans, and they'll be selling, you know, nice fun stuff so that you can get nice gifts for people or for tourists to get something to take home and remember the Riverwalk.
I walked from Michigan Avenue and was one of the first people on the walk today because I was there and they took down some of the barricades that kept mm-hmm. some of the stairs off. In fact, I was the first person down the steps at Columbus today. And so,
well, what'd you think?
That's my claim to fame. I counted 13 riverboats between Michigan Avenue and the lake. 13 sightseeing riverboats, all docked mm-hmm. along there. Those are new docks then, right?
So the Mercury sightseeing location by the Columbus, between Michigan and Columbus, they just built a fifth dock for their operations. And what is also new is entertainment cruises on the north bank of the river. They have a new boat that was that glass one that you would have seen.
The Odyssey.
Yeah, that one's them over there. So, there's a lot of boating activities happening on the Chicago River.
I think it's great. I love the green space. I can see where some of this retail stuff would go in. I think a lot of thought went into it, and you can see it. And watching it for the last several months, you could see how, you know, it's not just rolling out some sod and saying, okay, right. Here it's better. The amount of infrastructure that went in was really fascinating, and it's all come together.
John, the other challenge about this portion of the Riverwalk is, like we said, it is part of the rails to trails section, and then back, you know, long, long, long time ago, the rail yard came literally up to the dock wall. And this is, again, was great for the city's development because they were able to exchange goods from the waterway going, you know, east through the Great Lakes to the rail yards that then could go west and continue on to the other part of the country. But when we were putting this improvements in, we literally did come across rail timbers and rail lines and things like that.
Oh, wow.
So that was an interesting part of the project. You know, we worked very closely with the architectural firm of Mueller & Mueller, and they also brought in Site Design Group, who were the landscape architects. And one of the things that you didn't see today, but is coming in later this spring, as you can start to plant more plants, and, you know, it's still been a little chilly around here, but we're going to be planting a lot of allium flowers, and those were real interesting native flowers for the region, and it's the same kind of flowers that Marquette and Joliet would have been paddling past back in the 1600s when they discovered the region.
You and I have to go, but we'll talk again another day, maybe when some of these other elements come in. I'll just mention this in passing then. One of the things is a monument to the submariners from World War II.
Exactly.
And it's just fascinating. There's closer to the lake from where I am, there's this monument, and it says, past this point, 28 submarines built in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, sailed past this point on their way to the theater in World War II,
mm-hmm.
which is fascinating to me because I didn't know any about
that. Yes, it is. It is amazing. And hopefully you had a chance to speak to some of the submarine veterans who really got together and said, you know, Michelle, we'd really like to have some kind of a plaque or something. And they put this whole plan together to put that wall in with the opening, and you sit there and you can see where the submarines would have passed under Lakeshore Drive. They really did a lot of hard work pulling this together, but it's an interesting fact, and little-known fact, I think, that 28 submarines were manufactured up in Wisconsin. They did drills in Lake Michigan, came through the Chicago River to the Sanitarium Ship Canal, to the Illinois, to the Mississippi River, out to the Gulf of Mexico, and then down to the Atlantic Ocean, to the Panama Canal, and to the war effort in the South Pacific after Pearl Harbor was bombed.
I was wondering, I guess that's what it was, but think about that. They make the submarines in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hello, that's in the middle of the country. That's how they got them there. Congratulations. We'll visit again. Michelle Woods is the Chicago Riverwalk Project Manager. We'll visit again another day, Michelle.
Thank you so much, John. Have a good day.
It's a beautiful city, and it got prettier today. Earlier on the show, I said that there's two more episodes of Game of Thrones, and this text poured in, John, there are two more episodes, not there's two more episodes, signed the Get Off My Lawn Grumpy Grammar Guy.
But I thought there was only one more episode left.
I said penultimate episode, which means the episode before the last.
Right.
So last night was the penultimate episode.
So next week is the last one?
So really, that grammar mistake I made
was moot.
Not even appropriate. Oh my God, John, Jennifer Aniston has zero talent. We were talking about who today is Doris Day would be. Some of you said Jennifer Aniston, America's sweetheart. But this texter disagrees. King John, Lady Gaga would be an example of today's Doris Day. Gaga doesn't have the innocent, virginal public image Day was required to have back then, but Gaga has the singing talent, the fame, and shows potential as an actress. And 219 said, America's modern sweetheart is Sandra Bullock in terms of choice of roles and personality, but if you include singing, Anne Hathaway, Jennifer Lopez, maybe Ashley Judd are worth honorable mention. Y'all talk amongst yourselves. I just brought it up, and people have strong feelings about that. You're going to have strong feelings about this if you don't already. I'm reading from the USA Today, 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 Today. It says, what does the Trump administration want? Administration officials want China to stop stealing U.S. intellectual property and forcing companies to hand the IP over to do business in China. They also want Chinese government to stop subsidizing that country's manufacturers, giving them what the U.S. considers an unfair advantage. And they want China to open its markets to more U.S. products and services. Tariffs, theoretically, prompt U.S. businesses to shift from Chinese to American and other suppliers. That hurts China's economy, and it prods its government to make the concessions that we want. So maybe there's some shared pain. As a result, rather than paying the 10% tariff, which we are on some items, which you haven't noticed much, either because they're not in place or because they're either getting concessions from the manufacturers or the providers are actually just taking the loss, you're going to notice it now because it's going to go up to 25%. On dog and cat food, cigarettes, beer, apricot jam, bovine semen. I keep mentioning that because who knew? Live eels, frozen retail cuts of meat, shampoos, shaving cream, pneumatic tires, handbags, dog leashes, facial tissue, toilet paper, towels, napkins, window-type air conditioners, manure spreaders, buttons, motorcycles, bicycles, bicycle helmets. You get the idea. Just about everything we buy comes from China, it seems. And the tariff is going to go up 25%. So what did China today say? They say, okay, fine. If you're going to do that to try and hurt us, we're going to hurt you. We're going to put tariffs on stuff that are coming from the United States. So that now means cotton, agricultural products, a lot of the things that we sell here to China over there, they're now going to charge a tariff on for them to come in. So now everybody's going to pay more. Phil Levy is a professor over at Northwestern University at the Kellogg School of Management. Phil, welcome back to WGN. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good. What do you say about what I've said so far? That's my summary. What do you think?
About bovine semen?
No. About all the other stuff.
Oh, the other stuff. I think you characterized it pretty well. The only thing I would add is that it's actually a little worse than you make it out, because the list that you gave, perfectly good list, that tends to be consumer products, and those are very important, especially if you're a consumer. The other thing to remember is that China is supplying a lot of things that we use when we make cars or when we do other products, and American companies are going to get hurt when their costs go up, when those things get to be more expensive.
The president said farmers are going to like this. What's he talking about there?
I think he's making promises that he's going to give them money. That we've already done $12 billion in subsidies, and I think he's promising, I think it was another $15 billion. I think he knows that has to be appropriated by Congress, but that's what I think he had in mind. Farmers, for the most part, by the way, don't seem to like handouts. they seem to want to earn their money rather than just get it as a government compensation.
They also seem to like the president, too.
So far, yes, although I think a lot of that comes from believing that he's just about to solve the China problem and this is all going to go away, and we don't really seem to be heading in that direction.
But the objective is admirable here. If they're stealing or shortchanging us, then we ought to do something about it, right?
Yeah, but we should do something effective. And unfortunately, this doesn't seem to be very effective. Part of the problem, you gave, again, a good list of U.S. concerns, things like intellectual property protection and subsidies. They actually, even from what the White House put out in January, had a list that kept going on and on after that. And I think China is not quite clear what they need to be doing that would make us happy or that would defuse the tension. So we're not getting results.
I'm sorry, I'm confused by that. I mean, they're stealing intellectual property from us. They're doing all of the things that do seem to be unfair to our manufacturers. We're going to put a tariff then on their stuff coming over here. That'll either force them to negotiate in good faith, or it'll make American-produced products more competitive. So that helps American manufacturing, right?
Well, it doesn't necessarily help, especially if the Chinese products were inputs into American manufacturing and we're competing with countries that don't face those tariffs. It makes us less competitive. And the complication comes in first by the number of issues. And also, if you take something like intellectual property, I think there's little doubt that China has done a bunch of objectionable things. But the Chinese would say, well, we don't officially steal. Now, we do say that you have to strike deals with, you know, with Chinese partners when you do joint ventures, and if you then decide that, you know, this will work better if you share your technology, well, what can the government do about that? I don't think that's particularly candid, but this is part of why that gets to be complicated.
Is it possible that these, say you're a manufacturer and you're in China, because you can get the stuff real cheaply done there, then you sell it to the United States. Now there's a tariff because you're in China. This might help American manufacturers, but maybe you just move your plant to Vietnam, and we don't have trade sanctions with Vietnam, do we?
No, we don't, and you're exactly right that, in fact, when there was a report from the American Chamber of Commerce in China asking what were businesses moving out of China planning to do, and it was just what you said. You look for other places in Asia. Relatively few who are relying on things like low-cost labor were talking about, for those tasks, doing a return to the U.S.
Well, maybe, so I guess it's whose threshold for pain is the highest, right? Because so now Vietnam's going to make stuff cheaper and we'll buy it from Vietnam or India or Indonesia, someplace like that. But China still isn't getting the dollars. So it's that might not help us that much, but it is going to hurt China, right? I mean, would you agree that these tariffs will hurt China?
Yes, absolutely. The tariffs will hurt China. They will get to keep selling to the rest of the world. One of the problems with the way we've done this is even though countries like Japan and the European Union, which works as one for trade purposes, even though they have some similar concerns, we've been having a hard time playing well with others. So we haven't really done this in the kind of unified way that might be more effective.
You know, it's amazing to me in looking at the list, and I did for a while today look at the 6,000 items that are on this list, is how much food there is, because we produce more food, I presume, than China. But they said a lot of the food we produce gets processed over there one way or another and then shipped back here. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, and I think that hits on a really important point for understanding the way modern trade works, which is we like to think that a good is made in one place or the other, and instead the development we've seen in recent decades is global supply chains, where one stage of processing is done in a place. And that's why you don't end up saying, you know, U.S. goods are more competitive and Chinese goods are less, because often those Chinese parts were factoring into the competitiveness of U.S. goods. And as you note, that happens in agriculture as well.
I wonder what happens then. I wonder if people are on board. We do a daily web poll question here, Phil, and we call it the news click. And today we're asking our listeners, you know, are you on board? Maybe we will collectively share this pain to get a better trade deal with China. And in the long run, that will be good for us, and maybe it'll help American manufacturing. But it's going to cost you, on average, $700 more per family, because we're going to end up paying more for goods and services here. So are you on board? And I don't know what my listeners will say about that.
Do you want to give them some hints? I think it depends a lot how you interpret the question. If you interpret the question as, are there real concerns about Chinese business practices? I would answer, yes, there absolutely are real concerns. If you ask, are the series of actions that the president's taking likely to get results, and are they well-advised? I'd say the answer is no.
Well, what's
so it's all which part of it you pick out.
Fair enough. But what's the problem with the president's plan?
It's several-fold. So one is, like I said, we didn't work in concert with our allies and trading partners, so we're much less effective. We walked away from things like the TPP that would have really put pressure on China. We've been way too scattered in our critique. So the Chinese offer us baubles, like we'll buy some more soybeans. I'm not saying that's unimportant, but it doesn't get at some of the core concerns we've had. And I don't think the president has convinced the Chinese that they have a way out. And so if they figure they're going to get hit whether or not they help us, then they're not that inclined to help us.
Will this actually make things more noticeably expensive when I go to buy a dog leash or a baseball glove or some bovine semen?
Yeah, I think when you do your bovine semen shopping, you are going to notice something. It depends really whether there's sort of easy substitutes for a lot of these products, if you can get them from another country. I think we had already sorted out Chinese products a bit that way, where the first $50 billion that we put tariffs on, that was the stuff that was relatively easy to substitute. Now we're getting into the harder stuff, and that means you are going to notice.
Is that why the markets are off? I mean, didn't we see this coming? Why did the market drop 600 points today?
Okay, so first, the caveat, market does things for all kinds of reasons, and if I could give you, perfect analysis of why the market moved, I'd be doing things other than talking to you on the phone. But I think what's going on here is, all last week and the time before, the administration had been leading everybody to think that we were just about to have a great China deal. And instead of taking one step forward, we seem to have taken several steps backwards. And that's all gotten called into doubt.
And today is when push has come to shove, right? Because this all happened Friday, and then China retaliates today. So now we're in it, right? It is happening today, right?
Right. So remember that you had a Chinese delegation visiting Washington Thursday and Friday last week. And as of Friday afternoon, before markets had closed, the president last week was tweeting, this looks good, we're still talking, things are nice. I think as you get to retaliation over the weekend and people get to assess, they realize we're moving deeper into a trade war.
So should I stock up on anything? Like, I'll bet if I went to the Jewel today, I wouldn't see toilet paper 25% more, although the tariff is 25% now, 15% higher than it was previously. Should people stock up? Are they really going to see prices jump 15%?
That depends on how individual stores do things, but as a general rule, if the demand is shooting up now, you will see prices shooting up now, especially when you can't resupply and these things are getting scarce. So I think the time to do that was a little while ago.
Oh, all right. Phil Levy's a professor at Northwestern. Well, this has been thoroughly depressing, Phil. I sure appreciate your time. And
glad I could help.
let's continue to follow this. And by that, I mean, why don't you continue to follow this, and we'll call you again in the near future, sir.
Deal.
That's Phil Levy, Northwestern University Kellogg School of Management professor. John Williams, Doris Day would not be caught dead, no pun intended, wearing the streetwalker outfits worn by some of these people nominated on your show today, said someone. Gaga, talented, no lady, Jennifer Lopez, et al. Times have changed. I think Emma Stone works for me. I think Anne Hathaway works for me. Julia Roberts can't sing. She doesn't have to. Those three work for me. You were on the Gaga bus, which is fine. I mean, listen, times are different, so maybe it is Gaga. Instead of being a sweet, vanilla, all-American girl, you can be a strident, righteous, social changer, which people like Lady Gaga are too. And that's admirable. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, how are you?
Hi, John.
By the way...
I always have pain, so I don't know.
I don't know if that's...
There should be the Rokon Pain Relief Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I should think of them, but I just think of my own personal struggle.
And it could be even phantom pains, that maybe pains that don't always exist, but you maybe think they do. Those might happen, too.
I am very certain that none of these pains actually exist.
Then you go to the Joint Relief Institute, and they pretend to put a joint lubricant into your knee.
Totally helps.
That would be... Actually, that makes a lot of sense for me.
And they charge you the same amount, which is brilliant on their part. So who's
it's a good
your,
business model, actually.
Who's your Doris Day today? Who is the All-American sweetheart?
Felicity Huffman? Too soon?
Lori Loughlin? No.
Yeah, that's the problem. We just know too much about our celebs these days,
well,
right?
That's a good point.
You know, Doris Day, you know, I don't know what's going on with Doris Day, like, you know, on the side.
Well, she was helping the animal rescue organizations.
Okay. Generally, people who are doing that got other things that they're worried about. They got to do something to, for the things that can't control themselves.
I think it's just in her heart.
Was she married? I don't know. How many times was she married? Do we know?
Four.
Four? All right.
That's pretty normal for Hollywood.
That's what I'm saying.
Average.
We don't really know what, you know, she was like, you know, America's sweetheart. And we talked about this a little bit earlier on the TV side. That mm-hmm. there was a scene that we cut into her little package today, into the Obit package.
Yeah.
Of her being carried down a street. By, I think it was Rock Hudson or something, you know, one of those, you know, romantic comedy deals. And there, she walked by a police officer and she goes, "Officer, officer, this man is trying to drag me to his hotel room." And the police officer looks and goes, "I don't blame him." And
that's a different point in time.
Comedy was done in 1959.
Doesn't that just make you shake your head?
Sure.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, it wouldn't be funny if the guy, like, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, calling in a 1099 or something, you know, all the cops are jumping on the guy and then they're taking him away. That would have ruined the comedy.
But that joke doesn't happen today, does it?
No, it does not.
No way.
It does not.
All right, so what's the highlight of the show coming up, Ro?
Brett Baer is going to join us coming up at 3:40 to talk about about the world. There's a lot of, I don't know. I tried to take the weekend off of the world.
Yeah, and just watch Game of Thrones and just kind of be involved in that world.
And we are going to have a conversation. It's going to kill Kevin, but we are going to have a conversation a little bit later on the program. I think we're at 4:40 about the gaffe of the week at Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
This is a good one.
Yeah, they had another one.
Yeah, if you have not seen it, this is probably even worse.
Was it the bag of Doritos?
More egregious than the coffee cup.
Totally more egregious.
So we'll talk about that. And people are like, "Oh, the show is so over." Yeah, no, the show is over. But you know, they're working so hard on making every one of these episodes technically amazing. They're missing one little thing. I think they're Easter eggs. You know how they say that about that?
Yeah, but the producers are saying, no, not intentional. Totally overlooked. And then they remove it as soon as the, you know, the viewers tell them.
How does the dragon not run out of gas? At some point, don't you think it wouldn't have any more fuel to keep burning things?
Yeah, what is that? You know what?
How many miles to a gallon does that thing get?
It keeps eating entire herds of cows.
I guess.
That's true. And that gets you a lot of methane. Mm-hmm. And I just sometimes I get that, too.
All right, I'm done. Williams, out. Yeah. Goodbye.
All right.